Welcome, 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 geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to a brand new edition of Geek to Me Radio, episode 258. Today we have two, count them, two composers for you. First up is Herdy Steffensdotter talking about her work on Why the Last Man for Hulu. Then we'll talk with composer Michael Kramer about his work on the new Netflix series, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Hogwarts houses, 1 ring rules them all. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all.
And for those of you finding us for the very first time, this might be your very first experience with Geek to Me Radio. Welcome to you, and thanks for listening. I'm your host, James Enstall, and each week we try to bring you someone new from the world of pop culture, be it TV, movies, comics, or video games, and hopefully you'll enjoy our conversations. For those longtime listeners, this may be your 258th episode. Hello to you. Wherever you're coming in on this crazy train we call Geek to Me Radio, thanks very much for finding us. Hopefully you enjoy what you hear. If you would do us a favor and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're on, subscribe there and leave us a nice 5-star review. Let us know how we're doing. We appreciate that, and it does help us out in the search engine optimization and things like that for both the podcast and for the live radio show we do on Sunday nights on the Big 550 KTRS. That's all I'm going to say about me. Let's get into our guests. Right now we're talking to composer Herdy Steffensdotter about a brand new series that she's the composer for, Why the Last Man. It's based on Brian K. Vaughan's graphic novel, and we see a lot of these graphic novels and comic book properties coming to the small screen and the big screen alike, and it's always exciting to talk to the people who make the music. So, Herdy, thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So getting a project like this, as I just kind of alluded to, there's all these graphic novel and comic book projects being kind of created, and it almost feels like this is the modern mythology that we're kind of seeing implemented across all these lines, and the music that has driven some of these projects has just been dynamic. When you're taking on a project like this for Why the Last Man Standing, what is your mindset kind of going into it, and how are you beginning to approach it musically?
It was a very new territory for me to step into a big TV series like this, because it's also, you know, working on a narrative that is so long, and the world is expansive. I mean, this is going to continue after season one. You kind of have to, it was definitely like a new beast to tackle to create the whole sound world for Why the Last Man. But I just started small. I just went with my first small idea of, you know, after reading the script and after going, I hadn't read the graphic novel, just like going through it, finding some inspiration and watching the first episode, I just went with my first instinct of just creating like a first theme, something that I felt kind of would capture the beginning of the apocalypse when everything happened. So that was my entrance into the world of Why the Last Man.
And I always find it fascinating, too, to kind of find out how composers and musicians get attached to projects, because sometimes the director or the writer or the producer has worked with a composer before, and they're like, hey, I really like what this person's brought to another project. Other times, I know some of you kind of almost have to audition. You send in a sample based on this. How was it that you got tapped for this project, if you wouldn't mind kind of expanding on that a little?
Yeah, exactly. I had never done anything like this before, and kind of new in the film scoring game, because I think it's been maybe 2.5 years that I've been scoring films and television. So yeah, I'm kind of like a little baby stepping into this world. So I don't have like a big reel of music behind me. So I just sent in some of my music, and I got help from the music supervisor, Sue Jacobs. She's a really excellent music supervisor, and she kind of guided me of what she thought might, you know, appeal to them. And I basically just went through everything I had and tried to scrape together, like, you know, maybe 15 tracks. Because I was very interested in the project and the story. And I remember when I got the email, it was like 11:30 p.m. and I saw something pop up on my phone, and it was like, yeah, new series, Why the Last Man, about this. And I just couldn't fall asleep. I was like, just got this like feeling like, oh my God, that sounds so good. So I don't know. It's just like when you get this kind of like primal instinct of that you really want to do something. So yeah, I just sent in my music, and I was very lucky that the showrunner Eli and the other people that are working just really liked the reel. So I guess it was a strike of luck that I somehow managed to get together a little bit of music of what I had to get this project.
Talking about music too, it's something you've always kind of had. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you started taking piano lessons at age 8, but you're not one of those composers who, like, from the onset of early childhood's like, I want to do this. You kind of, you went to law school and studied that for a while, and you hated
yeah.
it. Who can blame you? But then you fell backwards into music again. So that's got to be a very cool thing, that having at the age of 2021, deciding that, no, this is what I want to do with my life, and now you're doing it. And that's got to be an amazing feeling. It's validation almost.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm totally not like most composers are like, yeah, I've been like a cello genius since the age of 7. So I was like, not that at all. I like barely read music or sheet music or anything. So I had the biggest imposter syndrome for like stepping into it, coming from a totally different background, you know, law school and just some, you know, kind of super straight up studies. So I didn't even know that I could write music. So it was a very weird thing, or like a big turn to go that direction. And honestly, like when I started studying, the whole time I was like, yeah, this is just a temporary experiment. Like, this is never going to happen. So it took me a little time to accept that, I could do it, and that I really wanted to, and that was my passion.
And then you were part of an electronic duo, East of My Youth, if I'm not mistaken, that you worked with that. So having the performing and things like that, now you're composing. Is there an aspect of the live performance and things like that you miss, but the composing thing, have you found that like that is more of what you consider your natural setting, or is it a little bit of both?
I think it's a little bit of both. And I really, especially with COVID, I really do miss the performance part. And I am finally, I've had very little time because the film scoring kind of took over my life, which I'm very, very, feel very fortunate to have that opportunity. But I have been working on my own music and my first record to come out hopefully next year.
Oh, great. Wow.
So I definitely want to keep the performing part, because I feel like when you're, you know, I'm just like kind of a nerdy studio person. That's who I am. So it's very easy for me to be just kind of locked in my own cave and not see anybody and just write music. So I feel like it's kind of important for me personally to also connect to people and kind of be able to perform my music in with other living, breathing people and have that conversation. I really enjoy that.
And as someone myself who enjoys the artistic side and kind of doing the passion projects, going from law school and then deciding you're going to get your master's degree at NYU in music and composition and stuff, do you still have members of your family who are like, well, okay, but you should have something to fall back on? Or when was the project? Was it like the composing The Sun Is Also a Star, where your family's like, oh, no, this is what she's doing? Have they accepted you're not going to be a lawyer?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I think my parents were a little bit worried in the beginning, like, oh my God, our child is, she is doomed. Nothing as good is going to happen from this. So, you know, just like the parental existential crisis of their kid going into art. But I think they kind of understood pretty early on, even though I wasn't making any money and it was a lot of struggle, that I was really, you know, had my heart into it, and they've been super supportive.
Do you remember the project, what project it was, where they kind of realized, yes, this is what she's doing and we're fine with it?
I don't think that was any project in particular, because the first years that I was making music, I never really had a job.
Okay.
I was mostly working other jobs, you know, side jobs, and just trying to make my own music, but I still felt that they supported me. So, you know, I think it was a good thing that I never had to have a money job or prove that, you know, to justify that my heart wasn't making music.
Many times with a musician, there's someone in the family who is also musically inclined. Was it your mother, your father, an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, someone who kind of pushed you a little bit to get into music and excel at that, even though it was always in the background? Was there someone who kind of took you by the hand or was an inspiration in your family?
I think it very much came from me. And okay. I was about, I think, 7 or 8 when I just begged for doing piano lessons. I mean, really weird. I was a super nerdy kid and I really liked classical music, and I was just kind of just really wanted to do it. But then somehow I was like also a little bit of a lazy student. So I never finished my piano studies and I didn't want to practice. So, you know, all that stuff. But my dad was always really, he's like a music lover. He's like a jazz fanatic and he really loves music. So I feel like he was always very supportive of me to do music, and he would drive me to piano lessons. And, you know, my mom supported me too. She bought me a piano when I was 9. So I think it mostly came from me, but my parents definitely supported. But nobody was really pushing me to do it in any sense.
And again, that's something I find so fascinating about how you've gotten into music, because like I said, you weren't someone who knew early on. It wasn't like a family member who was very musically inclined. So I don't want to say it's refreshing, but it's kind of cool to have like the opposite story from what a lot of composers and musicians tell me. So it's very fascinating that not only you have that kind of different upbringing, but that you've been successful at it as much as other people who started early on and everything. That's got to, in a way, feel good to you as well. We're going to pause right there, take a brief commercial break, and come back talking with Herdy Steffen's daughter right after this. Please stand by.
This is a man's world, but it wouldn't be nothing, nothing, not one little thing without a woman or a girl.
Hi, this is Tova Felchew from The Walking Dead. I play Deanna Monroe, and I'm happy to be on Geek to Me Radio.
And we're back. Geek to Me Radio, the show that is only possible with the help of our sponsors. And our premier sponsor, of course, the City of St. Charles, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. You know them by the website, discoverstcharles.com. Legends and Lanterns will be here before we know it. We're nearly in October, one of my favorite months of the year, because Halloween's one of my very favorite holidays. It's a lot of fun, and no one does it better than St. Charles. If you've not been to their Legends and Lanterns Festival, it's really really a lot of fun, something unique, something for the whole family. Maybe you're wanting to get out of town. Maybe there's a fall break coming and you want to do something new with the family. Come check out St. Charles at Halloween time. It's the middle 3 weekends of October. And it's, like I said, it's a family event, fun for the whole family. The majority of everything down there is free. You can interact with all the living history characters like Edgar Allan Poe and Igor from Frankenstein. They'll have the weird sisters from Macbeth. A lot of fun to be had. And of course, the pumpkin glow, which is always one of the funner, listen to me, the one of the more fun things to do. You'd think I do radio for a living. It's always a lot of fun visiting St. Charles, even if it's not the fall, though. There's always something going on, a lot of fun things to see and do. If you're from right here locally and you haven't been over there lately, go check it out, because I'm always amazed by how much things change in just the span of a month if I'm not down there. There's a new shop that's opened up, a new restaurant that's hit the street. So go check it out. Start with the website. That's for those of you who are local and for those of you who might be coming from out of town. The website, once again, discoverstcharles.com. That's discoverstcharles.com. For an historically good time. Hopefully we will see you there this Halloween season. Before we took that last break, we were chatting with composer Herdy Steffensdotter about her work on Why the Last Man, and I asked her about not starting out early in music and kind of rediscovering her love of music later in life when she was in college.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I remember when I started the music school, I felt really overwhelmed that I felt that most of my fellow students had that like massive, either coming from music families or like a long musical education since before. But, you know, I think it can be, it's maybe more common that composers have that long musical background, but it definitely, you know, anything can happen in life.
Absolutely. And with FX new series on Hulu September 13th, we might add, Why the Last Man, and Herdys has been the composer for all the music. A lot more women are getting these composition roles where they're composing and everything like that. It's just one of, I think society is shifting to where women composers, women writers, women directors, we're kind of seeing this, I don't want to say renaissance, but where they're coming in and they're just knocking these projects out of the park. So this has got to be, again, a great time for you to see other women who worked on this particular show, too, coming to the forefront, their talents being recognized. That's got to be a great time to be a part of all this.
Absolutely. It's very inspiring. And I remember just a few years ago when I was studying at NYU, I was always wondering, I was like, why are there no female teachers? Why are we not studying about any women? Where are all the women? Like, why are they not breaking into this market? If I'm now like, you know, a young woman in my early 20s and I can't, you know, I can't see a single woman to look up to, it was a weird feeling. So there's been a major shift in the past couple of years, which is incredibly inspiring to be a part of.
And with all the stuff you're doing, you're obviously, like we said, composing just not only just this project, other project you're working on, and also the performing. You mentioned releasing an album later on. Do you have, what is your end goal like? What do you see yourself as the ultimate, this is where I want my career to be in like 5 years? Is it working for like a huge corporation doing musical scores for their stuff? Is it performing? Is it doing a little bit of both? What is the, I guess, 5 to 10 year goal for you when you look at your music career?
I would be super happy if I wouldn't have to work too much, to be honest.
Sure.
If I would get to a place where I would have, you know, financial security to be able to, I think, choose and be part of projects that are inspiring and that I really want to do, to have the privilege of making that choice, and also to be able to work on my own music. I think, you know, and I'm almost there. I'm getting there. So in a sense, you know, there's not a lot more that I want in that sense.
Any just, aspirations? You know. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry.
No, I was going to say, you mentioned when you were going there, why there weren't more female teachers, why aren't you learning about more? Is there any desire in you at all to teach?
I'm open to it. I haven't really thought about it, but I'm definitely open to trying it out. Yeah, maybe not like as a full-time thing, but I think it can definitely be something that I would be interested in at some point.
If you could impart one thing to people out there, be they brand new people who are kind of dipping their toe in the musical waters, or someone who wants to and aspires to be at your level where they're composing, what bit of advice now would you give these young people who want to get into the musical field and do kind of the stuff you're doing?
I would say write your own music, and really never stop writing your own music and doing your own art, but also just take whatever projects come along. Just surround yourself with people that inspire you and do do all the projects. Just try it. And you have to, you know, nobody's going to come knocking at your door. You have to go and find them yourself. I think that's important that, you know.
What's great, too, is with social media. Like, I've seen keeps coming up in my Instagram feed. There's a girl who's a drummer and she knocks out. She's just like constantly doing her thing. But there's people who do dance and music and everything like that. So the social media aspect has really opened things up where people can get their stuff. If they're doing original music, original things, that they can actually get eyeballs on their projects now, which is an exciting time, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell people where they can find you if they want to keep up more with you. I know we've got your website, which is justyourname.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. But any social media handles that you're active on or anything like that?
I only use Instagram. I'm not really good on social media, unfortunately. But I do. I post there if I have something new to share.
Perfect. And again, make sure you check out the website. We'll put a link in the show notes for that. And make sure you check out Why the Last Man coming to Hulu on September 13th. Herdy Steffendotter, thanks so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
My thanks once again to Herdy Steffendotter. Thanks very much for the time and congratulations on the project. If you've not yet checked out Why the Last Man on Hulu, make sure you do so. It's a fabulous series and the music will astonish you. I'm going to take my next commercial break. We're going to come right back. We'll chat with another composer, Michael Kramer, about his work on the Netflix series He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Please stand by.
Hi, this is Alan Oppenheimer, the voice of Skeletor, and you're listening to Geek to Me.
Welcome back to the show. So glad you're still here. Michael Kramer is up next, a composer on He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, not to be confused with Kevin Smith's Masters of the Universe Revelations, also on Netflix. Michael Kramer is the composer for the music behind this new series, and we got to talk to him about that.
Right now we're talking to Emmy-nominated composer, multi-instrumentalist, and the person behind the music for the brand new He-Man and the Masters of the Universe on Netflix, Michael Kramer. How are you?
Hello, hello. How's it going, James?
Doing well. Thanks for the time today. It's always fun to talk to composers because it's the music that really drives a lot of these projects. I've always said before that if you just hit mute during an action scene or a suspense scene, you take away the music, you got nothing. So it's very cool to talk to you about this.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me on and highlighting the music for the show. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So first question right out of the gate, probably the most obvious. Did you watch He-Man a lot as a kid? Did you go back and watch some of the old episodes and stuff?
You know, it's funny. Growing up, I had Castle Grayskull and a bunch of action figures, and they were a huge part of my playtime. But I was a little I was born in 83, so the show came out like when I was born, so I was a little young for it. So I didn't actually watch the show that much, but I had I had all the toys growing up, and they were like a huge part of my childhood. So, God, I remember, you know, going in the kitchen and like my parents would always be pissed at me for like, you know, putting them in the fridge and in their shoes, and you know, it was I had a really built up this world of Motu, Masters of the Universe, in my mind. So it was kind of great getting to work on this remake because I had already built these castles in my mind for the show. And so when it came time to reimagine it, I already had, like, you know, these images, these worlds that I had already constructed when I was just a little kid. So, but then, of course, I did go back and, you know, watch the show man, it's a trip. It's a trip watching the show with fresh eyes. It's a classic.
Yeah, no doubt.
I can't believe they got away with some of the storylines and the characters that's in that show. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, updating something that this is, you know, it's over 30 years old, going on 40 years now since Masters of the Universe first debuted. The toy line, the music for the original, obviously you don't want to kind of mimic it, but you kind of want to pay homage, I would think, to what came before and kind of have some subtle themes from the previous series. Was that at all something that was discussed, or was everything thrown out and we're going with a blank slate, fresh, clean? It's all you.
It's a great question. You know, for the score, I would say that a lot of it is a fresh take, and it's based upon my own, you know, how I viewed the characters and my take on them. And but for sure there are some nods, and wherever I could, I would go back to the score and try to grab some inspiration. Like, I mean, little subtle geeky music things, but like the main title for like the transformation sequence for Adam, it's in this musical mode where it's like a series of notes, and it's like it gives you this feeling when you hear that this series of notes, this scale, right? And so that's the same scale that I used for my theme for He-Man. So it's not the same melody, obviously we can't use that music, but it's drawing from like the same colors, you know, it's the same sandbox that I'm playing in for that theme. So I tried to do that wherever possible. It was some light inspiration from the score while still trying to make it my own.
And it's got to be cool to think about, you know, hearkening back to your childhood when you're sitting there playing with those toys. Someone like me, like if you tell me, give me Teela's theme, I can still hear it in my head. You know, the, obviously, like you just mentioned, the by the power of Grayskull, the music swells as the lightning hits him. You're doing that for an entire generation. There are people now who'll be watching this as children, probably with their parents who also watched it, who your music will be kind of what they remember 30 plus years from now. That's got to be an intense feeling when you kind of think about it.
It's really cool. Yeah, I mean, for sure, at the beginning of the process, especially because the world of Masters is so huge and so rich with different characters. I mean, there's so many themes that I ended up writing for this season, and it was pretty daunting to try and write that many themes and not make it feel like you know, there's too many melodies, too many notes to bring it back to like Mozart, too many notes. So that was a tricky thing, but I also wanted, you know, each character to very much have their own musical identity. We need to fall in love with these characters, and I feel like it's my job as a composer to help give you little like musical like little rungs on the ladder, things to grab onto as the listener to associate. Oh yes, I hear this thing, and it makes me feel certain ways when I you know, see that character on screen. So yeah, and you know, growing up, I love some of the classic animated shows, Batman, mm-hmm. the animated series, and like Gargoyles, and oh god, these shows have such a huge imprint on my mind and my imagination and my musical sensibilities. And so yeah, there's definitely some pressure up front that, you know, what I'm doing is will imprint on the next generation, but I try to take that pressure and turn it into something positive and use that energy for good, you know?
And obviously you're no stranger to composing for shows, movies, TV, things like that. You've worked on your Ninjago, obviously that's the big one. There's so many different iterations of that, from the TV to the movie and everything like that. Lego Star Wars, you did the Free Maker Adventures, All-Stars, even the Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian. So you're used to working with these kind of huge themes for these big, like blockbuster type of titles and marquee type properties. Any nerves at all when you say, okay, now we're switching gears, you're going with He-Man, which again has its own established legacy. Any nerves at all?
Take another quick break, come back and continue chatting with composer Michael Kramer. Please stand by.
Hey, this is Yuri Lowenthal, but you may know me recently as Peter Parker / Spider-Man, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
That voice you heard bringing us back from commercial break, Yuri Lowenthal, of course. We just had him on the show, on our live radio show last Sunday, talking about becoming Prince Adam and He-Man and one of his yet many, 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 many voice roles that Yuri has done. I should mention, too, so we do a live radio show. If you're listening to the podcast now, tune in on Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. We always try to have some fun guests lined up. This past Sunday, as I just mentioned, we had Yuri Lowenthal on with Parvesh Chhina talking about his work. Obviously, we miss outsource, but he's doing all these vocal roles himself lately. So if you're only listening to this podcast, make sure you tune in on Sunday nights for our live show. We stream video live as well, so you actually could see Yuri and Parvesh as they caught up. It was so cool to see them. They haven't, I guess, chatted for a while, and I got to hear the story of how they became friends. So if you're only seeing the podcast here, you're missing half the fun. Check out our live radio show Sunday nights on the big 550 KTRS, but you can stream it live from anywhere. Go to ktrs.com/stream and you can listen live on your computer from anywhere in the world. And of course, we do stream the video on twitch.tv/geektomeradio. You can also find Geek to Me Radio on Facebook and on Instagram and on YouTube. Please go to the YouTube page and subscribe there so you never miss a show. And we would appreciate that sincerely. Back to our guest, we were chatting with Michael Kramer and asked him if he had any nerves taking on a property like He-Man.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm really grateful for the kind of the tee up and the setup that my career followed to get to this point before working on He-Man, because you know, I've been working on Ninjago for what feels like the entirety of my adult life. It's been more than 10 years now and counting, 14 different seasons and so many different themes. So I really feel like I cut my teeth in that world and learned how to, you know, what makes a good theme, what makes a bad theme. And from that point, the next little lily pad that I jumped to was Lego Star Wars. And that's where I feel like I got most of my nerves out as a composer. You're working with, you know, pre-existing universes and big iconic cherished themes, because it doesn't get much more beloved and cherished than the music and themes of Star Wars and John Williams. Mm-hmm. And so having to work with that music for Lego Star Wars, feel like it desensitized me a little bit in terms of nerves. Right. I got all that out of my system. So when it came time to Motu, there wasn't so much there. I think I was mostly just excited to have done all this work, you know, in the last dozen years of my career, writing these big themes. And now it's like, wow, there's this giant canvas with all these amazing characters, with all these different attributes and qualities. And now I just get to paint. So I loved it. It was such a fun process.
And I know you're also a Midwest boy right up the road from us. You're up there in Chicago is where you were born. And you, I believe it was your father who was a master woodcrafter. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know, growing up, we used to spend so much time in his shop in the basement together, building most of the furniture in our house. He's amazing at he's kind of has an engineer brain, and so he used that when it came to building furniture. And. And I feel like it really prepared me for being a film composer. As strange as that sounds, they seem very different on the outset, but there's really a lot of similarities. I feel sometimes my job is much more like an architect and a builder and a constructor than it is a musician.
Yeah.
You know, I'm given this huge storyline, and I have to build these themes, and I have to space it out and plan, and it needs to be developed in a certain way. And then, you know, once you have the grand vision for like the the city, then you can go in and like start focusing on a house or like it, you know, quote unquote, an episode. I'm like building a metaphor as we talk here.
I got you.
And, you know, so then you can, all right, and now, okay, I've got the concept for the house. And now, all right, what is the room or AKA a scene within that look like? And, you know, what are like the little tiny details of that room? And so you can't really work on the tiniest details of like, you know, what are the colors of the curtain in this tiny room without knowing what, you know, the full vision of your city looks like. So there's a lot of constructing and building that goes into it. And so, yeah, watching my dad work and, you know, measure three times, cut once. There was a lot of really great lessons learned in that woodshop.
So I guess one of the things you would have had to learn, but I think it would be kind of hard because I'm a very detail oriented, looking at everything, double checking myself and double guessing myself. As someone who is working either with it, with crafting something like that from hand with wood or working on music, is there ever a point where you are able to step away and say, this is perfect as it is, I'm done, or are you always fine tuning stuff?
I will answer that question just by saying, thank God for deadlines. Yeah, I mean, it just feels like it's never done. I always could add it. I always could feel like, oh, that's not good enough. I can make it better. Thank God there's a clock and a mark on the calendar. It's like, well, it has to be done now. So this is good. It's time to move on. I can, you know, as an artist, I'm, you know, we're prone to like obsessive, you know, assessing the details and going down rabbit holes. And so that I for sure fall into that camp. So, I feel like life outside of like a really rigid schedule of working in film and TV, if I were just going on my own and writing music, you know, for my own without structure, I would be just a mess. My life would just devolve into, take chaos. It's already chaotic even with the structure. So.
Right. So having the deadlines is basically what keeps you going.
Yeah. It keeps me sane, keeps me focused and not going down too many rabbit holes for sure.
One thing that I was curious about, obviously, we just, not even last month, 2 months ago at Tops, had Masters of the Universe Revelations, also on Netflix. Now we're getting this He-Man, which seems a little bit, it's not as dark from the tone of things that I've seen and everything like that. So when you're composing the music for this, you've got basically the same executive producers and everything like that. Were you given any kind of, hey, we want this to be lighter than this, or did they never even mention the other project at all and be like, treat you guys as two separate children, each growing on their own, doing their own thing, excelling at what they do best?
You know, it was very much kind of separate children. I didn't really hear that much about the other production. I didn't know, you know, what happened in the storyline. It was very much treated as two separate things, and especially in terms of tone and what they're going for. You know, I think what's great and what I loved about working on this show, this 3D animated show for kids, is that there's a little bit more freedom, a little bit more of a blank canvas than Revelation. So that maybe had a little less pressure for me than the other team, which was nice to experiment. And obviously, so much respect for the show, but Mattel is really great, and I think has so much shown so much bravery for going to have, you know, pitching storylines that are really creatively challenging and unique. So my hat's off to Mattel really for taking chances, because, you know, it's really easy, I feel like, to do the opposite. You have an iconic property, you don't want to piss anybody off, you just take the safe route. And so, kudos to them for taking risks. And I really, my heart of hearts, I believe it's going to pay off. So.
And this cast that's lined up for this one is great. Yuri Lowenthal, who we've had on the show just a couple months ago as He-Man and
nice.
Adam. You've got Gray Griffin as Evil Lynn. You've got Kimberly Brooks. We've also had her as Tila. Just such a fantastic cast. Tom Kenny, for crying out loud. You got Fred Tatasciore. when you're working on these themes, obviously you've seen the storyboards, you've seen the productions for the drawings of the characters. Do you do anything different when all of a sudden you're writing a theme for let's say Orko, but then you find out Orko's voiced by Tom Kenny? Does it change a little bit of the attitude of the music depending on who's voicing it?
1,000%, yes. I mean, the character's voice is the soul of the character. I mean, that list is insane. It's they managed to assemble an incredible cast of voice actors for this show, and it's such a pleasure sitting down and working with that level of talent. Listening to the quality and the performance and the unique quirks and idiosyncrasies that each performer brings to that character for sure informs the choices that I made. So having that level of talent and not worrying about like having to make up for lack of performances ever right. in the show. They nail it every single time. I don't have to worry about like band-aids or, you know, making a scene work because they didn't deliver their lines properly. I never have to worry about that in the show. And that's, it's such a gift to then just focus on, okay, all right, what am I doing? What is music doing in the scene? So it's just an incredible cast.
Obviously, working on music for a project like this kind of creates a whole separate set of challenges from if you're working on something like a video game, like you were in the music department for Assassin's Creed Unity, or if you're working on the music for Thor 2, Dark World, or things like that. What was one of the hardest things, one of the biggest challenges about working on the music and composing the score for He-Man and the Masters of the Universe?
And we've got one more break to take. I promise this will be the last. We'll come right back after this and continue our chat with composer Michael Kramer. Please stand by.
Thundercats, ho! Sword of Omens, come to my hand. I, Lion-O, command it. Hi, this is Larry Kenny, the voice of Lion-O, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
And we're back for our final segment here on Geek to Me Radio. Before we continue talking to Michael Kramer, I want to make sure we talk about our official movie sponsor, Marcus Theaters. That's marcustheaters.com is the website. Marcus Theaters and Movie Tavern bringing you a fantastic way to experience the movies. And I know a lot of these companies sometimes release their movies on streaming on their streaming service, whatever it is, HBO Max or whatever it is. It's not the same. It's not the same as seeing the movie on the big screen, 10 feet tall, in the theater with a big bucket of popcorn and some of your friends. And if you really want a fantastic time experiencing just that, you can rent a private theater from Marcus. Go to the website, marcustheaters.com. Just do a search for private theater, and you can rent a theater for you and 20 of your friends. You get to pick which movie you want to see. You can even, if you want to add on things like concessions and stuff like that to make it more of a big to-do. Maybe you're celebrating a bachelor party, a bachelorette party, bridal shower, if you've got something going on, a birthday. It's a fantastic thing to do, and that way you and just some close friends can hang out. You can Mystery Science Theater a bad movie, or you can just sit there in awe of a really good movie. And in my opinion, there are no bad movies, but it's a great way to get back into the theater. And some of these movies, they need to be seen on the big screen. Shang-Chi, for example, just came out. Brilliant. Needs to be seen on the big screen. I'm not sure how good your sound system is at home or how big your TV is. It's not the same. Check out the website, marcustheaters.com. You can find the location of the Marcus Theaters and the Movie Tavern closest to you. Buy your tickets right there on the website. Get movie reviews and more. Do it all from the website, marcustheaters.com, for the best movie-going experience in the galaxy. We're finishing up our chat here with Michael Kramer, and right before we took that last break, I asked him about what was the biggest challenge of all the stuff he had to do for composing the music for this brand new He-Man. We've got the classic series that was out in the 80s. We've got the brand new one that just dropped a couple months ago from Kevin Smith. What was the biggest challenge about composing the music for this particular He-Man and the Masters of the Universe?
Yeah, one of the things I mentioned earlier on was that there's so many different characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what makes, I think, the universe so fun, is that it's and engaging. It's populated by all these really quirky and unique characters that trying to find melodies and instrumental colors that were unique for everybody, but then also not overwhelming the listener with too many musical ideas. That was a real challenge, more so than I've ever experienced on other projects. I when we first sat down, I did this whole like roadmap, and the showrunners were incredibly helpful. They helped guide me, and we sat down and figured out like, episode one, we're introducing this theme. Episode two, we'll breadcrumb this theme, and then it pays off in this episode. So there was like a whole roadmap for how we would introduce all the different themes to the viewer, so that it just didn't feel like, you know, they're drinking from a fire hose musically at first.
Right. Kind of let them trickle in slowly before they get overwhelmed.
Exactly. Yeah.
And with this being such an amazing project, you talked about the legacy and everything like that. What about, what was the highlight? What was the best part of composing this?
It was a unique moment in my career in that I feel like quite a few things converged and hit at the right time. I feel like I really found my musical voice through this show, which is really special. You know, I don't think I could have written this show without, you know, 10 years of Ninjago and 5 years of Star Wars and all the other projects that I've done. They all led to this one unique moment in time where I just happened to start with He-Man. And, you know, those moments in your career are rare, and I'm super grateful that the showrunners gave me so much freedom to explore that I got to really, find out who I am as an artist on a much clearer and deeper level. So just for me, selfishly, as an artist, it was, such a joy to, you know, learn about who I am as a composer. So it was great.
Kind of open you up and allow you to kind of have new muscles, new skills to approach the next project with, then it sounds like.
Bingo. Exactly. Yeah.
And one thing I did want to ask you about, the 2019 Disney Imagineering, which obviously now with Disney Plus, there's all sorts of things about the Imagineering projects and all the incredible work they've done. They tapped you to write and produce several tracks for the Galaxy's Edge theme park. That had to be a very unique experience, too, because you've done movies, you've done TV, you've done all this composing. But to write music for a theme park, I would think, is a very unique challenge.
So different. So cool. Yes, and also very daunting. You know, I'm used to... I am used to my music interacting with the medium in a very particular, specific way. You know, it's like the music hits at this moment with this image, and I feel this.
Yeah.
You know, I feel very comfortable in that realm. I know, you know, I have some tricks up my sleeve. I can make people feel this at this moment, and you know, I feel real comfortable doing that. And this was just like throwing me out of out of water onto dry land, because it was such a different prospect for writing a piece of music that people would experience in a physical space, and you know, trying to imagine what they would be doing. And it was just a very, very different process. And then also, like, you know, it's a song. It's not like a piece of score. So I grew up playing in bands and did songwriting for quite a bit before I, you know, finally settled that I wanted to be a film and TV composer. So I feel really comfortable in that world. So that was actually the other cool thing, is that I got to tap back into that side of myself that I hadn't in a really long time. So cool to work with Imagineering. It's an incredible bunch of brains over there, and yeah, just like a dream to be able to write music for Disney World and Disneyland. It's so cool.
You just mentioned having, you know, played in bands and things like that. Obviously, I said at the beginning of the show, you're known as a multi-instrumentalist. What instrument is your He-Man power sword, where you take that instrument in your hand and hold it up and you've got the power, be it a sax, an electric guitar, an upright bass? What's that power sword instrument for you?
Yeah, it's such a good question. Actually, you know, it is the guitar. That's probably like the cheesy, you know, like obvious answer, but it really is, you know, like coming from like a rock background. Sometimes I feel like I approach my orchestral music like I'm just like rocking out and like, you know, banging away at a guitar. Like power chords here, power chords there. And that was actually really helpful, you know, approaching the He-Man score, specifically for, you know, like the powering up music. It's just like the whole the music there is just like one giant power chord without actually playing it on the guitar. So yeah, it was the guitar in my mind that I was harnessing for that music.
And what else have you got coming up that people can listen for your music to be in?
Oh man. Yeah, this is like a pretty crazy fall for me. We've got The Ghost and Molly McGee. That's coming out on Disney Plus. That's October 1st. And then there's actually another Lego Star Wars special. It's a Halloween special.
Oh, great.
I did the first holiday special, which was so much fun. And this is kind of the little sequel here to that. That's also actually coming out, I believe, on the same day.
Oh, wow.
October 1st. So yeah, those are the two big ones that are coming up, and there's a couple other shows later this fall, but I don't think I can talk about them yet. So,
gotcha.
But yeah, it's a very, very busy time period this last year for me. So it's cool to finally see everything coming out and get to see people's reaction to everything.
Well, that combines two of my favorite things, Star Wars and Halloween. So I don't know how that could go wrong.
Oh, man, it's so good. Wait to see it.
That'll be awesome. And tell everybody, too, if they want to keep up with you, where they can find you. Obviously, your website, michaelkramermusic.com. But social media handles, anything like that you're active on?
You can just go to michaelkramermusic.com and it's all my handles are right there on the front page. But you know, I'm not too much of a social media guy, to be honest. I don't know what your feelings are about social media these days, but it's a hard world to be living in, and being on social media feels harder than it used to be.
Yeah, it's one of those necessary evils, I feel.
I mean, in your position, you have to be. But I imagine that it's do you feel that way, that it gets harder?
It can.
Yeah,
Mike, I think it was Mike Tyson who said the reason social media is the way it is because, you know, if you said that to someone's face, you would get punched. So I think a lot of people just don't, they've got that barrier. It's like, bah, I can say whatever I want.
Yes, without physical consequences. Yeah,
exactly right. Yeah. So that's sad that people aren't more kind. And I think that's, social media is not really contributing to people's ability to grow into kindness, unfortunately, but it is what it is.
No. I'm too sensitive. So
and it sounds like you're too busy anyway, so you wouldn't have time for it.
That's true. But no, thank you so much for having me on. This is great talking to you.
It's been absolutely great. And thank you. And anytime you want to promote one of those other projects, when you can talk about them, feel free to reach back out. I'd love to have you on again.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's going to do it. That's a wrap on episode 258. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for subscribing and helping the show. Make sure you go to bit.ly/geekedme if you're going to do any Amazon shopping. Going to that link will automatically, won't change the way you shop, but we will get a small portion of the proceeds from whatever it is you might buy on Amazon, and it does help the show. Thanks, as always, to Joey V, making this show sound as good as it does every single week. I would not be able to do it without him. And make sure you check out our live radio show Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Until next week, my friends.
It's not in the way you watch I Zombie. It's not in the way you watch The Flash. It's not in the way you love Scotty Young Art. It's not in the way you play Mario Kart. It's not in the way you look when you make Game of Thrones references. That's a show. This is Geek To Me Radio. That's a show.
Thank you, Eternia. Good night.
Hey, kids. Are your parents about to buy you a shiny new toy from Amazon?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Well, don't be selfish. Share some of that money with us. Before going on Amazon, make sure to type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser. It will look just like Amazon.com, except it'll say referral Geek to Me Radio up top. And then when you check out, a tiny percentage will go to support the show without costing you 1 cent more. So before your parents get you that gizmo, gadget, or widget, make sure they type in bit.ly/geektome in the web browser.
bit.ly/geektome, bit.ly/geektome.